First, a quick shout out to Yuan Turpin for the great music that you just heard right there. That was a clip from Tycho Knott's Love off of his Rhythm and Beats album. You can find the information for his music down below. Welcome, everyone, to the next great, fantastic episode of the Homeroom Podcast here at PlayStation University, or psuni.com. We have your fabulous cast that you're always such a fan of listening to, all of our 32 fans out there in the world. So why don't you guys say hi?
Hello.
Hello.
And I was just kidding about 32. It's probably more like 5 or 6. But
dang it.
Anyways, we have a very nice episode planned for you guys today. It's probably going to be on the shorter end. We're not going to have it be closer to an hour like the previous ones have been. But first, we can just jump right into what we've been playing recently. For me, I have recently finished Darksiders 2. I finally got around to finishing that game. Spec Ops The Line. Charles has talked a lot about that game, and we've talked a lot about it. And I finally decided to sit down and give it some time, and I ended up not getting up from the chair until I finished it, basically.
Ooh, yes.
It apparently didn't take very long.
No.
Yeah, that means two things. One, it means that it was really good and it grips me from beginning to end. And two, beginning to end was the amount of time it would take you to, like, watch 1.5 Lord of the Rings movies.
Yep.
So that's not
extended
necessarily
cut or normal.
Normal, not extended cut. Yeah. It would be about the length of Return of the King. That's about how long the game is. Maybe a little longer than that, but not very much.
I never argued its length.
No, yeah. I mean, I don't think it takes away from it. I think if I bought the game brand new for $60 and it was 5 hours long, I'd be kind of aggravated. But I didn't buy it brand new when it was $60, so I'm not really too broken up about it. I think the game is a perfect length. You know, the story is told exactly the way it should be. There's not really any filler, hardly at all. It was great. It was a very, very captivating story, and I was very, very impressed and surprised, especially by Nolan North specifically, because I always had him in my head as the Nathan Drake guy. And I didn't know that he could do something other than be witty and kind of douchey. Like, I didn't think he could actually be a captivating voice in a game that has you gripped and you question your character's sanity. Like, he sold that performance.
Yeah, so, he really did.
Yeah. It's a great, great, great game. So if you're against the military, or if you think games are just about violence, on face, you might think, oh, this is a game that glorifies the military and violence, but it's actually the exact opposite. So,
yep, the exact opposite. It's brilliant.
Yeah, people should definitely play it. It's a really, really good game. And besides that, I've been playing Final Fantasy 13, which is really awesome. I'm going to let Colton talk about that one because he's been playing it too.
I played Darksider, so I need something to talk about that's different than you.
Yeah, that's true. and DMC Devil May Cry. By the time this podcast is up, I will probably have a review on the site, if not very shortly after. So yeah, but by the time the podcast is up, the embargo will have been lifted, so I'm going to talk about it right now. It's awesome. I did not expect it to be very good. I jokingly called it Gamers May Cry before I played it.
Yep,
and
sure did.
I'm eating my words right now, because not only is the game extremely fun, the gameplay is probably the best in the series, I think. Also, I think the story is really, really well done. Like, it's how you should do a reboot. It retells the origin of the character. It's really, really well done. I'm still not a fan of his redesign, personally. He just looks generic. And, I mean, it's Devil May Cry, so the dialogue is obviously really corny and cheesy. But, I mean, it's good. It's a lot better than I expected, so.
I was hoping there was going to be some kind of plot device behind his redesign, but I'm assuming that, or I'm gathering from your statement that you haven't run into anything like that.
Not
unless, like, he changes his DNA in some plot-heavy way.
I will say that Ninja Theory, they understand that people I'll say that they understand that there are some people out there that prefer the old Dante, and there are some parts in the game that poke fun at the old Dante. There are also parts in the game where, you know, after you beat it, there's obviously skins and stuff you can unlock. So I'm not going to say too much more, but there's some clever stuff in the game that it definitely harkens back to the old design.
Cool.
All right, so yeah, you two can go now.
Chocolate Thunder, Boy Wonder, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I've been kind of paralleling David with my game playing for fun. I have just finished Darksiders 2. I'm not going to elaborate on it since David already did, but I really love that game. Better Nephilim than Dante is now, I would wager.
Nephilim,
whatever, Nephilim. It's a made-up thing. It's like people say unicorn when it's definitely unicorn.
What?
The I is silent. The I is silent in unicorn.
Okay.
See, people are just dumb like him right there.
It's not silent anyway. Harry Potter, and that's the way to judge words. So, go on.
So, anyway, I've been playing Final Fantasy 13. I'm really surprised how much flack it's gotten. It is very linear, and maybe people are just kind of like too hooked on the sandboxy feel, but I think the linear gameplay really, you know, pays into the story heavy narrative. It's a wonderful game. It gets better the longer you play it.
That's very true. Which is usually the opposite for linear games.
Yeah.
Usually they start out strong.
Well, cause usually, you know, you introduce the basic concepts and then they never really, you know, grows and it gets stale. And on this one, it was pretty much like the opposite. I mean, for 5 hours of the game, you're still like learning new things. Your characters are still getting new things. And that really, you know, helps charge it up. And there are some actually pretty intense moments, character deaths that you didn't really necessarily think would happen. I, of course, won't go into like spoilers and stuff like that, but there are some riveting moments, and I really don't know why it gets so much hate, but it is basically shaping up to be one of my favorite Final Fantasies for a lot of reasons. I think the character design and the graphics of just every area is visually stunning. Like, I've never played a game where every place I've been to was candy for the eyes. So
I can agree on the visuals.
It is absolutely gorgeous, and it is a few years old, which is crazy how great the graphics hold up. But I don't know. I'm loving it. I'm only about like 22 hours in, and I'm hooked. So I'll probably comment on that next week as well when I have a more full version of how I think the game shaped up. Other than that, really haven't been playing too much. I've been busy. So pretty much Darksiders, Final Fantasy 13. So for me, man. How about you, Charles?
Just real quick, it kind of baffles me that you say that this one's turned out to be one of your favorite Final Fantasies. And the only reason I say that, because like, I agree with the visuals. It's definitely one of the more beautiful of the Final Fantasy series, no joke. But the story, I felt, was much weaker than any of the other Final Fantasies. But I guess that can be a conversation for another podcast. I've been playing 13-2, as a matter of fact. I actually picked it back up today. And I loved it for all the reasons that I hated 13, because it's more open. There's a lot more freedom, a lot more side quests and things like that. I'm enjoying it so far. The story is really confusing with the time travel, but other than that, it's pretty good. I've been off and on with Borderlands still. My progress is at a snail's pace right now. I think I level once a week, maybe, if that much. And I also have been playing Skyfighter, which the review for that is up on the website. And the God of War multiplayer beta. I've been playing the crap out of that. I absolutely love it. And that's it.
Very nice, very nice. So would you agree with our assessment of the beta? Like, do you think it's going to be pretty good?
Yes, yes. And I had no faith in a multiplayer God of War at all. I didn't know what to expect, but I didn't really think it was going to be good. I thought it was just going to be thrown together, just like the multiplayer added onto a lot of games recently. And it's actually pretty impressive. And it's one thing you said about no lag or slowdown or anything. Yeah, that's true. I haven't experienced that once.
Well, there you go. I guess you just answered yourself from the last podcast.
Yep.
I'll just go ahead and delete that one off the site then.
Cool. Wow.
Okay, we're going to get back to multiplayer here in a little bit once again, but first, just a little news topic that has happened recently. It's been unveiled that the PS3 has surpassed the Xbox 360 in global sales. Yeah, so celebrate, I guess. One thing I do want to say about this is, first, you know, it's global sales. Keep that in mind. So it's, you know, everywhere across the globe. Second is, I'm pretty surprised because not only did the 360 have a year head start, but it seems like out of those two systems, besides the Red Ring of Death, the PS3 has gotten much more negative flack from the gaming community. You know, it had the price thing, it had the PSN outage, now this used game thing people are up in arms about. You know, people talk about Sony having financial problems, all kinds of stuff, so I think it's pretty impressive. It speaks to the software library, I think, that the PS3 is able to sell so well because people want to play the games.
Yep.
So I think it's going to be pretty interesting to see how the next generation shapes up. One thing to keep in mind, though, is that if you, like, all three of us live in the U.S., and I think if you were to ask people to have game consoles, it'd be almost probably 3-1 360 over the PS3. But it's in the other regions where the PS3 seems to dominate.
Yep.
And so I think that, you know, maybe Microsoft might want to do something to get the 360 or the Xbox's image improved in other regions, but then at the same time, they don't really need to. So, I don't know. I think it's interesting that the PS3 is sold more. I'm pretty surprised. It's been close, but they finally passed it.
Yep. I think it's a pretty awesome feat, especially with that year head start, but I'm not surprised as much, though, because of the library of games. Like, the mainstays on Xbox have pretty much been there from the beginning. Like, you know, Gears of War, Fable, Halo. Those have been the ones that, like, when E3 hits, those are the big titles that you look for. Mass Effect started off as a huge thing for the Xbox, but then it went multi-platform. But that's been my case for Sony over Microsoft since the first Xbox and PS2, so it's beating a dead horse for the most part.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I think what hurt Xbox the most is that a lot of their original IPs kind of fell flat, like in the Fable series and other things like that, while the exclusives that they got from multi-platforming, like, you know, the Final Fantasy series and stuff like that, people still really wanted to play it on a Sony machine. So it's not surprising that there was a big catch-up when, you know, the PS3 is a more powerful machine. And if you're a hardcore gamer, there's no reason really to play with a less powerful machine if you can afford both. And the price drop and everything else like that.
And another thing is, I think it's a little ironic that Microsoft tries to build the 360 as the media center of your home. But then when it comes, well, it doesn't have Blu-ray, but also if you want to watch Netflix, you have to pay an extra fee a month. Yeah. So I think that's kind of why the PS3 is, you know, Netflix recently announced like a month or two ago that it, out of all the places that you can watch Netflix in the world, the PS3 is the most used for streaming. So I think that PS3 is in a lot of houses, and I mean, I think Sony's in a pretty good position going into the next generation.
And this might be a little bit like of extraneous information, but if you also look, the 360 is a terrible data hog when you stream, and the Netflix as well. It uses twice as much data as if you were streaming from a computer.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it really is a huge hog, and
It just generally seems really inefficient. Like, they're so loud. I don't know why.
If you don't install a game, then you'll wear out the motor and the rotator like in no time too. And it's actually really sad because maybe this is why it hasn't been as popular in other countries, but in all of its data usage, the 360 is a terrible hog. And as you know, IPs and stuff, service providers have started putting cap limits. For like the cap limit of Canada, you can watch about 13 episodes of Weeds before you would hit your cap limit on a 360. Yeah, you could watch like one or two HD movies, or like the example in the article was 13 episodes of Weed in HD. So I'm not surprised other places who do have like stricter internet and stuff are like, nah. So
that's a good point. Yeah, that's the kind of stuff you don't really think about too much. All right, so next up, speaking of franchises that used to shine on Sony platforms and are now multi-platform, see that segue?
I see that segue. I see what you did there.
We're going to talk about Tomb Raider again. I think we've talked about it on almost as many episodes as we've talked about Last of Us. This game looks awesome. I'm very excited for it. But also, as we talked about last episode, there is a new multiplayer mode. So, yes, in a game where it's about survival on an island, well, mind you, your health regenerates and you can't swim, but it's still about survival. On this island, there's going to be multiplayer. And I'm just going to say it. I'm not going to mince any words here. It looks almost just like Uncharted.
That is exactly what it looks like.
The single player looks totally different. I think it does look a lot different, and I think people shouldn't really compare them too much because they're totally different tones and styles. That multiplayer looks almost like they didn't even bother reskinning the characters, it looks like. And, yeah, I don't know. The font even looks almost the same for whenever like a kill pops up on the screen. So, what do you guys think about that?
Now, just a quick question. Do y'all think that that was a publisher-pushed idea? Not just for the multiplayer, but for it to be similar to Uncharted?
Okay, I don't think it was like a publisher-pushed idea for it to be similar, but I think that it always is a publisher-pushed idea to have multiplayer or something they can sell an online pass to. That probably the reason why it was similar is they were like, what the hell? You want multiplayer in this? Like, And they were just like, okay, well, this game did it, so we'll just copy that. So they'll shut up.
I don't know. With all the comparisons that they draw, I think it wouldn't be entirely unrealistic to think that the publisher wanted them to kind of attempt to one-up Uncharted, even though it looks like they're going to fail.
I doubt that a publisher would be like, you need to emulate this game and that like that close of a regard, like for like legal reasons or whatever like that. But maybe.
I think that, whenever they had their strategy meeting at their super secret Square Enix table, that they listed out games that they could draw inspiration from, and it's probably a very short list for like third-person action platformers that have multiplayer. And so I think that it was just inevitable that it was going to end up looking a lot like Uncharted.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring up the super secret table, because there is a super secret trash can under that same table with copies of Kingdom Hearts 3, Final Fantasy Remake, and Final Fantasy Versus 13 in there.
No, XHD, they've recently confirmed, is still in development and that it will be released. Same with Versus. They've said that it is still being developed.
They've said so many things. They said Final Fantasy 14 will be awesome.
Hey, they're redoing it, so...
Wait, they said that Kingdom Hearts 3 is still in development?
No, XHD Versus...
Oh, okay, yeah. I thought that's what you said, and I was like, it's been like 30 years since the last game was out. I don't think anyone cares.
No, but it hasn't been 30 years because all these freaking spinoffs that they... Like, the last one they said is not a spinoff. This is a true Kingdom Hearts game. It was on the 3DS or whatever. I don't care. I'm not getting the 3DS to play freaking Kingdom Hearts. I want a real game.
You're not a real fan then.
No,
yeah.
No, I'm not. I'll be a fake fan, and I'm going to be a fake fan when 3 comes out, and I'm going to pre-order it.
That's actually an interesting discussion. You know, like, do you, if you're a real true fan of a series, does that mean you play every single game?
But it's spinoffs that make you purchase another console. I don't like that. Like, it's
fair.
Exclusively on other consoles. Like, there was a PSP game that was exclusive.
So, and do you consider yourself a huge Uncharted fan?
Me? Yes.
Why haven't you bought a Vita to play Golden Abyss?
I haven't bought a Vita because I can't afford it. I want one.
And you want one just to play that?
No, I don't want one just to play that. The only reason... I probably wouldn't spend the money. Like, if it was brand new... The Uncharted game, I probably wouldn't pay full price for it. And then it's hard to say that because now I have it for free on my PS3. So when I get my Vita.
Yeah, through Plus.
Yeah, I have it through PlayStation Plus. But no, I wouldn't have, you know, gotten the Uncharted. Certain titles that are on the major consoles, I don't feel confident in their portable versions. Not very confident.
Wow.
Even though Uncharted apparently has great reviews and everything.
Well, would you buy a PS4 day one if it launched with Uncharted 4?
Yes, but I don't count that as the same thing.
No, yeah, I'm just throwing different? Out some random questions. That's
How is it any different?
This,
I mean, the whole purpose of bringing those kind of games to other system is so people will buy. It's like product recognition. So
Kingdom Hearts went from a Sony console to a portable Sonic console, to a portable Nintendo console, not becoming multi-platform. They're exclusively on these devices. I don't want to buy, like, I already have my PlayStation, then I got to get the portable, and then I have to get another portable. When I pick one thing, like, me personally, because Colton, you probably buy, like, all everything, or it comes to you some kind of way, but
I buy whatever I want to buy.
there,
yeah, sure.
Like when the portables came out, I looked at them, I weighed the options, and I get one. I don't intend to own multiple portables. It's pointless to me. I don't understand that. You have options, and as a consumer, you have options, and you're supposed to weigh out the benefits, blah 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 blah. Spend the money. I don't have just money hanging out my ass just to buy everything. And
that's a sad life.
And if one game comes out on a console, I expect to at least be able to finish that story on that console. I don't care if it goes multi-platform like Mass Effect did. It still was on the Xbox. It didn't just jump ship to a PS3. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but you want that story. If they released what they did, all of those for one console, you would have bought it, right?
I had an Xbox when it came out. I got rid of
no,
it.
No, okay, like, let's say you owned all those portables and stuff. Would you have gotten those games?
Yes.
But see, isn't that kind of the point? Is that, like,
no,
they
no,
know you want these games, so they're going to put them on different systems, so you'll buy it? I mean, it's just, you know, economics there.
But it's stupid. I think it's
a How is it stupid? It's smart for them.
We've been through this before. Certain things that are considered a smart business move don't translate into being a smart move for a consumer. Like, we pretty much get robbed quite often. I mean, you've defended the DLC thing. That's cool. But that is just ridiculous. Like, you already got me buying the portable device with an exclusive title. That's cool. It stays within the brand. But then you jump ship to the DS and the 3DS. I don't like that idea.
Well, think about it. The 3DS
I can see where you're coming from.
The 3DS is an incredibly popular console. You have a game that you want to release. The people who own that console want a nice game for it. So it's a win-win situation for, like, the developers.
Yeah.
And I mean, I understand your point that, you know, sometimes it's not that great for us, but you have to look, even if it's not great, you have to look at why they did it and see that, okay, it would be dumb not to do that because it's such a good move.
Okay. Now, imagine, all right, to go off the first point that you said, you say Uncharted comes out, well, actually, David asked, Uncharted 4 comes out as a launch title for PS4, right? So I'm excited, and I buy the PS4, and I get it. Uncharted 5 doesn't come out on the PS4. It comes out on Xbox 1080 only.
Uh-huh.
Do you not think, would you not be pissed? You
Yeah,
bought
I
a
would be.
console. Like, you bought a console for this game, and then the next installment in that title isn't even on that console.
I mean, I guess I would be upset that they switch like that, sure, but I would understand like that they must have had a reason. I mean, that seems like be like a weird thing for me to argue, because that would be a stupid decision as far as Sony goes to give up one of their big exclusives. But
understanding
I mean,
a reason doesn't make it okay. I understand that there's money that comes in from this decision. That does not make me like it.
Well, yeah, I mean, you don't have to like it, but as long as you can understand it, then it's a little harder to, like, criticize it, really, when, I mean, there's literally no reason they shouldn't do it. Like, literally none. You know what I mean? There's no reason they should deny themselves money.
It could be one thing, in my opinion.
Fair. But, I mean, we had this conversation a lot. I always kind of do take the side of the game developers because, you know, I understand the business side of it, and as a consumer who isn't lacking as much funds, it is not really a huge issue. So, I mean, I want to, you know, like, sound like, ooh, I have tons of money, because I don't always have tons of money, but I mean, normally they're not going to be so greedy that people can't, or like they're completely pushed out of a game genre or a series due to price.
That's an interesting thing. I'm going to make one more point on this, then we can move on.
Okay.
So, did any of you play Bayonetta?
Yes.
Did you like it?
With one hand, yes.
Bayonetta 2 is being developed as an exclusive to the Wii U. Did you know
Ew.
That?
Okay, I take back everything
like
I said.
Crap like that. That makes no sense to me.
Yeah, well, I'm fairly positive that the only reason why that game's even getting made is because Nintendo paid Platinum a lot of money to make it only for the Wii U.
Yeah.
Because there was no information about them even wanting to do a sequel at all. Then all of a sudden they're like, oh, hey, we're going to make a sequel to a game that was on PS3 and 360 and make it only on the Wii U. And the first game wasn't even – it doesn't make any sense.
No.
But, yeah. So that's a perfect example of – not only is that dumb for consumers, but I don't think that makes sense from a business perspective.
No, because you're trying to sell a sequel to an audience that didn't even play the first one.
Exactly.
Or you're trying to convert those people that bought got the first one to buy an entire console because the sequel's on another one.
Oh, I mean, that's like the principle, founding principle of the Wii U is that, hey, we're going to be hardcore now. Everybody wants to come over here. Woo, Nintendo!
Mm-mm.
Like, I wouldn't be surprised if Nintendo Wii right now, if like Nintendo right now is trying to buy rights to Halo
or Rockstar. So GTA 5 is a Wii U exclusive.
See, you know what? You know what?
We're not. Let's stop giving people ideas. This is going to be terrible.
That I would have to jump ship because I have to play Grand Theft Auto, or I can just steal Colton.
So well, there we go. You just heard Charles say that, so this is a room full of hypocrites right now. That's all this is.
Yeah.
Oh, but if you pick the right title,
yeah,
you might be able to convert people.
There are certain games out there that are undeniably system sellers. And I think each company has those games. You know, Nintendo has a crap load of them. Those are their only good games, are the ones that they make themselves. And
like,
Sony's got... I see, for me, like, Sony doesn't have a one single huge blockbuster. Like, I think Uncharted's amazing, but like you said, I mean, even if Uncharted 4 came out on the PS4, there might be still a little bit of hesitation. But they have so many others that, you know, in time, people are going to buy a PS4 to play all those franchises.
Yeah.
And then Microsoft has Halo, and that's all they really need.
Right.
Well, and Gears of War, they're never going to stop making those either.
Yeah.
That's proven. Yeah, that's true.
And Last
eventually,
of Us
they're going to cross over. I'm pretty sure there's going to be like a crossover event. And they're just going to make one giant super game that every jock in the world buys.
It would. Both of those franchises are about Space Marines. So.
Yep.
Yeah.
It just makes sense to combine them.
It does. It'll be like Anarchy Reigns, but just Space Marines. Oh, man. All right, well. Anyways, there's not really a segue available for me on this one. Well, sort of, but not really. Reboots. Let's talk about reboots. There have been a lot, and there are some big ones coming this year. DMC, already talked about that a little bit. That was that's a pretty massive reboot. They didn't just decide to retell it. They totally redesigned the character in a pretty drastic way. And similarly, Tomb Raider, that's another reboot. I prefer the redesign on Tomb Raider, personally.
There are certain reboots that are completely unnecessary, a la DMC, and then there are some that are very much desired. Which the Tomb Raider one was one that we didn't even know we wanted, but once they did it, it was like, this looks tons better than the old Tomb Raider games. Well, the Devil May Cry just changed the skin. Like, okay, we're going to redesign the main character. And if you've played Devil May Cry's story, it was pretty sporadic anyway. So you could have made up anything.
That's a very good point. Like, I think they did a good job for it being a reboot, and I enjoyed the game. But if you look at the franchise that it's rebooting, it's not built on the story. You know, I don't know many people that... I mean, obviously, fans of the franchise like the story. It's interesting. It's kind of intriguing. But you're not going to play this new DMC to find out how the origin story has changed, really. You're going to play it to play Devil May Cry.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so I think if they just, you know, changed the gameplay the way they decided to change it and left the skin the same and just named it DMC 5, it would have been fine. Like that.
If you think about it, all right, the gameplay changes are essentially an evolution of DMC 4 with the whole pulling people in or pushing people away.
Yeah.
They definitely could have just made DMC 5 and been perfectly fine.
Well, that seems to ignore the reason why reboots happen, though.
What do you mean?
Reboots happen because most of the time it's like publisher pushed. And specifically in, like, this case of Devil May Cry, it was Capcom. Even after Team Ninja decided that they had, a reboot that was a little different, Capcom pushed them even further. And the reason, why these reboots happen is that they're trying to, A, capture a new audience, B, add life to something that they think it might be growing stale so people are not buying anymore, or C, they're just dumb. And I don't think a lot of the last one is why people think they do it, but I think that happens very rarely. I think that there's normally some kind of marketing or something else like that which segues into reboots like that.
Yeah.
I think that Tomb Raider reboot has to do with a lot of the fact that gaming isn't as sexual, it's as sexual, but it's not as gender biased anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so they're trying to make a female heroine that's a little bit more realistic and less of just this big stereotype, especially after that whole rape fiasco with them. So, and I can totally see how some people would like the new Devil May Cry skin and his new gritty kind of generic look and stuff like that, because the forums have people like that who do like it. So, I mean, I think that it happens for a reason, and you can't just be.
Yeah.
Well,
that's a good point.
I'll tell you what my reason is, or what I think the reason is. I think that they're being lazy, and instead of taking a chance and trying to develop a original character or story or whatever, they're taking tried and true projects of old and just reskinning them and putting them out. Granted, Tomb Raider did a much better job, and theirs kind of needed to happen. But the Devil May Cry people, off of the success of the previous games and the success of Bayonetta and other games that are kind of similar, they could have gone a different route and made a new game. But they didn't. They decided to cash in on an audience that already existed and just throw them a reskinned version.
Yeah, that's the publisher telling them that this sells. Let's keep selling it until it won't sell anymore.
Yeah, another little mini topic I want to bring up is, a lot of games nowadays and genres are becoming blended. You know, like, it's very difficult to find a game that's just about shooting stuff. Like, most shooters have upgrade elements, might even have platforming elements. You know, games like action games, like if you look at Darksiders and stuff, that's almost an RPG, like, at its core, or a dungeon crawler, or a platformer. And so, I mean, every game nowadays seems to have elements of other franchises, so it's hard to find a pure, just single-genre game. And so that brings me to the point with Devil May Cry I want to bring up is, I mean, neither of you have played it yet, but whenever I play the game, I feel like I want to do more. Like, I feel like these blended genre games have kind of spoiled pure games for me. Yeah. If that makes sense. Where after playing Darksiders, I mean, I feel like whenever I'm playing Devil May Cry, I want to run across the wall. I want to, like, climb up stuff. I want to open a treasure chest. I want to solve puzzles. And I don't get to do that because it's simply an action game.
Think about this. Like, do you think if they would have made Devil May Cry 5, that they would have blended in more of those newer gameplay options in an action game?
No, probably not. I don't think so.
Do you think that, basically, I'll word it this way, with making Devil May Cry 5, I think there would have been a standard that they had to progress forward with, and by doing a reboot, they didn't have to.
Oh, I don't know if I would agree with that. I mean, I think if anything, a reboot gives you a huge license to do something like that. I think that Devil May Cry at its core is just this like hack and slash kind of game, and they didn't want to mess with that formula. I don't think that they would have messed with that formula regardless if it was like the same game or whatnot, just because that's how that game is. But I'll definitely agree with David. I love the blending of genres and other things like that. It really shows an evolution in gaming. And maybe it kind of feeds into like people's ADD and stuff wanting to a lot more things, but it's hard to argue that being able to have your action game and have some RPG elements is ever a bad thing. Like, you know, that goes the whole back to just having extra content and, you know, an extra wealth of experience.
Well, you say it's hard to argue that it could ever be a bad thing, but do you think we might eventually get to a point where every game is so similar because they're all blended with the same elements? Like, if you look at a game like God of War, like, after Ascension, let's say God of War 5 decides to add dungeon crawling and, you know, more RPG elements, and then Darksiders 4 at that time, or 3, those games could almost be identical if genres try to move towards one middle point. And so do you think that could be a side effect of this?
Do you think that every shooter is the same?
Not yet.
Do you think that all pure games in a genre are the same? Because it seems to be like it would be the same argument that if the pure games like that are kind of close to each other can remain like with a unique end personality, then blending of the games, especially the different ways that you can blend the games, would to me at least show that it would be possible. But do you think that pure games are pretty much all the same in a genre? I mean, it's a realistic question.
I don't know. I mean, like if you,
I mean, do you
if
think
you decided,
Devil May Cry is
I was just
like
about
God
to
of
say
War.
That. I was just about to say that. Yeah, I think they're very similar. And I think that it's a good thing you brought that up, though, because I do think you have a point that small differences are what set things apart. And, you know, for example, with Devil May Cry and God of War, the differences were, you know, obviously the story is a lot different. And the gameplay, like, mechanics are very similar because it's fast-paced action. But they do have, you know, different weapons and styles and stuff. So I guess, I mean, that's true that, you know, they can still vary them up. But I don't know. I just don't want stuff to get boring because every game has the same elements. Because, like, it seems like every shooter nowadays has the same RPG elements where you upgrade your class and weapons. Almost every action game nowadays, you upgrade your different abilities. And I don't know. I mean, I like it, but I don't want to get tired of it. I'm worried.
I mean, that's fine. I think that maybe a problem is that people aren't, like, utilizing that to its fullest. And the blending of genres a lot of times is literally adding, like, RPG elements and stuff like that. So I think maybe once the genres become more evenly blended, then maybe that won't be an issue. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I can see what you're coming from now, but there are some gameplay elements and stuff that I just like. And so, like you said, after when you don't have those, it kind of feels like more shallow of a game. So it's like a catch-22 there. You don't want games that all feel similar, but that familiarity is still something that you miss when a game lacks it.
Well, I don't think that the blending of genres is going to be a problem, because if you look at the things that are being used, like what you said, Colton, about the RPG as being one of the main things, that the part that they're taking, which is mostly the style of progression, basically adding progression to like action characters or to shooters, that's like an easy upgrade to make and kind of a necessary thing to do. It said before that type of progression was only exclusive to RPGs. I'm glad that came over into other genres. Now, I don't think everything else is going to blend out like that, because not everything can fit, if you see what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you'd see that. You see the reverse of that with RPGs lately, like Kingdoms of Amalur, Dragon's Dogma. All those games have very fast-paced, action-focused combat. And that was usually only exclusive to action games like Devil May Cry and God of War. So I think it's kind of cool that, you know, more games are getting blended together and stuff. It's definitely an evolution of the medium.
Yeah.
All right, so that just about wraps everything up for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. I'm going to leave you with a few words of wisdom. Or, sorry, not words of wisdom, but a nugget of knowledge. There we go, nugget of knowledge.
I like that, nugget of knowledge.
It sounds like alliteration, but the spelling isn't. But I'm going to pretend it is. I've recently been reading a lot of books on gaming and gaming history, so I consider myself a scholar now at PlayStation University.
Word.
One of them is The Ultimate History of Video Games, which everyone here should read. It covers everything from pinball machines to the launch of the PS2 GameCube era. That's when it was written, so 2001 is as far as it goes. But it's super interesting. I'm only up to like 1980, and I feel like I understand the game industry so much more profoundly now, because I understand the origin of so much stuff. It's pretty awesome. So one little tidbit I'm going to leave you with is that, did you know that Activision was formed by former Atari employees that left the company to make their own game company, and that Activision was the first company ever to release a game, develop it, and publish it as a third party for a system that they did not create themselves.
And that game was?
I don't remember. Some crappy Atari game. But the point of the matter is that Activision was the first third-party developer publisher.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I didn't really realize they had been around that long.
And neither how have I.
Like, if you Google the evolution of Activision's logo, it's pretty cool. Like, they've gone through a lot of different designs. So, yeah. There you go. That's where third party came from. Because before then, like Atari and Magnavox and all those other companies that made consoles, they would just have one or two guys like develop a game in-house and release it on their system.
Thanks.
The more you know.
Knowledge is power.
G.I. Joe.
There you go. That's your nugget of knowledge, the new segment on the Homeroom podcast. And so with great knowledge comes great responsibility, so don't abuse that power that I just gave you.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Nope.
Thanks for listening, everybody. You can come back next week when we talk about other stuff that matters.
And more cliche little phrases.
Yes.
I will now leave you with a little bit more from Taikonaut's Love by Jan Turpin off of his Rhythm and Bits album. Once again, that information is found right down below. Thanks for listening. Thank you.